The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
You're listening to America This Week. I'm Father Sam Sawyer, joined by my colleagues Kerry Weber and Robert David Sullivan. And in a little bit, we'll be joined by John Miller as well, speaking about his article for America on the ethics and the dangers of artificial intelligence.
He is a wonderful journalist and frequent contributor to America at this stage. He also has been known to teach journalism on occasion. He's on multiple platforms. He used to work for the Wall Street Journal. He contributes to us, to NPR, Pittsburgh Quarterly. And we're really glad to have him here to speak with us today about his article, which is about the dangers of artificial intelligence in our brave new world, which includes self-driving cars, etc., that sort of thing. So, John Miller, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Always good to talk to you. Hi, Kerry.
Hi. We're very glad to have you back. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what got you interested in this topic to pitch this piece to us, because you had sent it to us.
Yeah. I live in Pittsburgh, which hosts Carnegie Mellon, which is one of the epicenters of the self-driving car movement. Uber has a big headquarters here in Pittsburgh. I always see Uber cars driving around with the spinning radars on their roofs, which looks very utopian and sci-fi. Although I always check, I ride a bicycle, and I always see the drivers usually have their hands on the steering wheel, which reassures me, but also makes me think we're not that close to having a society based on self-driving cars.
Right.
Anyway, I ran into a guy at a party who was I asked him what he did. He said, "Well, I'm an AI ethicist." And I'd never heard of such a thing. And I thought, wow, that sounds like something that would be great to write about for America. And I talked to Tim about it. And he had the same idea even before talking to me that America should do this story. And so I started with this ethicist in Pittsburgh and hung out with him a little bit and then broadened it out to talk to a lot more people and just learn about this whole world of people trying to decide or figure out what's the best way of making sure this technology doesn't hurt us. Because it is so powerful, and even if, as I sort of quickly state in the story, the robots are not taking over, we are in charge of our technology. That being said, it's so powerful that there are so many ways in which human beings can get damaged and sort of overlooked in what is the brave new world, and that seems like a very important issue for anybody who cares about the human person and especially for the church, which has not done that much work on this. And so ethicists are kind of sounding the alarm and saying, the Catholic Church, but also other moral and ethical thinkers and leaders need to learn about this stuff and work on telling technology companies and educating technology companies about the importance of respecting the human person as they invent all these machines. And, capital chases whatever sells. And so we're going to see investments in technology that people want to buy, and it doesn't always get invented with the right outcomes for people being taken into account. So I set about exploring that whole world, and it was one of the most, maybe the most fascinating reporting project of my life, because it's something that's changing technology, or it's changing the world so much, and it's so relevant to our lives.
I noticed in your piece you talked about the rise of the internet and how that sort of caught a lot of ethicists off guard. They felt they didn't respond in time for that, and talked about Silicon Valley not necessarily being cognizant of the ethical dilemmas they were forming. Could you say something about how the internet experience sort of urged people to get further ahead on artificial intelligence?
So the internet was invented by scientists who were sort of had practical intentions, especially with regard to working on research and the military. I'm sort of stumbling here because it's such a broad topic. And at the same time, you had the incredible increase in computational power that was leading to the capacity of offer. I guess what I want to say, the internet allowed companies to offer services using AI technology that people quickly discovered were incredibly useful. I mean, an example is Google Maps, which I use, and I'm sure you have all used on occasion, which allows this one company, Google, in California, to collect the whereabouts of a billion people and to process it and to show, offer suggestions about routes, but also to, sell you products and do all kinds of other things that kind of influence your life. And there was no way for ethicists to kind of to predict that because it happened so quickly.
John, one of the other things I found helpful, and you made the point earlier about the robots are not taking over, at least not imminently, because I have to admit that both when I hear the term AI ethics just in general, and also initially when this story was first pitched to us, grew up reading sci-fi, and my mind goes to like Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics, right? Or something like this kind of picture of how do we deal with autonomous technology that might be acting completely outside human control. But your article makes the point that there are also maybe the more significant, certainly the nearer term, AI ethics questions are about things that happen once we're using pattern recognition and these other more narrow artificial intelligence techniques across huge amounts of data so big that no human can accurately predict what's going to come up or what we're going to amplify doing it. And those are both nearer term ethical questions, but I also think in a lot of ways harder ethical questions than, like how would you want, like a robot walking around to behave?
That's right. And so there's two broad categories for our listeners to understand of artificial intelligence. One is artificial general intelligence, which is kind of in the philosophical realm of what happens if a machine, does become truly autonomous, which as Christians poses incredible questions. I mean, we believe that God gives us free will, but what if a machine has free will? What then makes a human special? And that's sort of more of an intellectual set of questions at this point that people do think is worth spending time on. It just doesn't have that many practical consequences for us. The second category, big category, is artificial narrow intelligence, which is what you're talking about, which is, how does the machine decide when to sell me a pizza on Facebook, or how does Google decide which route to propose to you to get home in the evening, which interacts with people's lives every day now?
Or how does the government decide which people to pull out of line at the airport for enhanced scrutiny and screening?
That's a great example. And the problem with that is that machines can't make decisions on their own. They make decisions based on data that's fed to them, which is collected by human beings who have their own biases. So, for example, one example I talk about in the story is if somebody applies for a loan, the bank then puts all their data into an algorithm. Well, if they're African-American or belong to some other minority group, there may be some sort of correlative data that would cause the algorithm to reject them, because it was collected in a certain way. And without a person there to kind of make a judgment and to impose a bit sort of human reason, even compassion, you end up with a world that's, even harsher and colder than ours is already.
You sort of cement injustices as they are instead of allowing artificial intelligence to find a better way.
Well, I'm remembering a recent example, and I think actually this has been going on in New Jersey, which recently worked to eliminate its cash bail system, right?
Yes.
I think I'm getting this
yes.
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of several jurisdictions.
Right.
Well, yes.
And so which is a noble goal, and there are lots of good reasons to want to do that in order to increase basic equity and justice. But one of the possible replacements for cash bail is running this algorithm that looks at criminal history and other tendencies to try to basically establish a score to say how likely is this person to reoffend? Can we safely let them out without, before trial?
Which is kind of trying to absolve ourselves or avoid making decisions and handing it off to artificial intelligence, which
right.
is a shortcut that don't know. It's not good in the long run.
And sometimes we find that based on how we've trained it or how we've designed those algorithms, that, you know, the artificial intelligence there is just as racist as the sum of the people who were involved in making its decisions in the first place.
Right. And so at a time when you need to really be as human as possible in making these decisions, we're absenting ourselves from that process in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Which is...
That's right. There is a more optimistic take on this. Nope.
Let's hear it.
We're getting depressed about this. In the story, I talk about a company in Pittsburgh called Legal Sifter, which is a legal research company which basically uses AI technology to read contracts. And they say that they're not laying people off. I mean, it's not like they're hiring hundreds of people, but they have business basically because they have the technology. And so the future is not robots making arguments in a courtroom for lawyers. It's lawyers using technology to do research and to make themselves better lawyers. And I'm a big chess fan, and I was just following the first game of the World Championships. And obviously, chess is a game which has been dramatically changed by artificial intelligence. But when the two guys are up there playing each other in the championships, there's no computers allowed. And so you still get the pleasure and the kind of visceral human contact of people having a truly human experience, battling wits, their human brains, obviously having prepared a lot with AI technology, but ultimately having that human experience. I think when it comes to things like music or art or chess or literature, it's so important that we hang on to, there's times when you should not have AI in the room, where it should be just the human.
How do you feel about auto-tune? Since I read your story, these other stories have struck me, and one of them recently, I saw the story from the BBC about this company in Kenya that employs like 1,000 people, and they're inputting data for the self-driving cars. They see images, they see what the cars see, and they like identify, they just spend all day tagging pieces of the image that the car sees and kind of building the knowledge for the car. But I don't know if that struck me as a form of dignified work, because it's almost like you're serving artificial intelligence. You're a cog serving them. When people say artificial intelligence will create as many jobs as it destroys, do you see any kind of problem or issue with the kind of work that people are doing?
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. By the way, the story was really nicely edited by Robert and other editors at America, so I really appreciate that too, guys. The Catholic Constitution thing, it really struck me when Taiwan Kim, the ethicist I profile in the story, he brought it up without me saying, I write for this Catholic magazine sometimes. He mentioned Catholic social teaching. I think what's very interesting is that, I remember like 20 years ago visiting some tech companies who are talking about automation and the kind of thing we're talking about in this story. And they're saying, it's great. We'll get rid of all these human workers using robots, and we'll put everybody on universal basic income, which is this sort of utopian idea of giving everybody a bunch of or a certain amount of money every year to make sure that everybody has enough, which is an idea that's well respected, actually. But the upshot being that people wouldn't have to work, basically. And I think what's beautiful about Catholic social teaching in this regard is that it affirms that it is important to be useful and feel useful, and it's not good enough to sit around all day, even if that can be fun sometimes, that doesn't fulfill the human person. And Taiwan, the ethicist, talked about when his dad retired, how depressed he got because he didn't have work anymore. And I think we can all relate to that. Now, to get to that was Robert, right, asking the question?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, to get to Robert's question. I think soul-touching jobs serving a higher sort of distant power have been around for a long time. I mean, is this any worse than – I remember going to a mailroom in Belgium a long time ago and seeing these workers whose job was to input the postal codes, and they would do like one letter every 10 seconds, and every hour they would go and put their wrist in ice water because their whole job was touching in five-digit codes so these letters could get to the right place, and reading other people's handwriting and processing hundreds of letters every hour. And I thought that's got to be the worst job. The AI Uber driver farm in Kenya sounds really bad, too. And this is a different kind of revolution because it's the first revolution that is proposing an automation of intellectual tasks. So we've had mechanical tasks automated for a long time, and this is the first time that you're going to have intellectual tasks being automated in a sort of mass way. And so jobs like being an accountant or other white-collar jobs could go by the roadside. That being said, the most common job for American men is as a driver, and so obviously self-driving cars pose a threat to that. But I think it's a huge problem, and I think the possible huge reorientations of how we think about work and how we think about income are in store for our society. I mean, people in blue-collar parts of this country, it's well known, are angry and frustrated at how the global economy has treated them. And it's not clear what the answer is going to be. And I think ethicists and spiritual and religious thinkers and leaders have a role to play in this conversation for sure. Right.
Well, it's interesting, particularly as it relates to cars, because I went to a session on self-driving cars at this sort of ideas festival last summer or the summer before, and I was... They freak me out. The idea of being, in Pittsburgh surrounded by self-driving cars just weirds me out. Sam is shaking his head because
I walk around Manhattan and
he wishes everything were more automatic.
Well, no, it's more I walk around Manhattan and think like, what a wonderful day it will be when private cars are banned from the island of Manhattan because there are just a couple self-driving taxis taking us all around. At slower speeds and allowing for, you know, like bikers and pedestrians to actually use the streets.
I think there's like a logical response to this and there's an emotional response to this. And because a lot of the data says that there would probably be fewer accidents overall if we did all use self-driving cars. But they would probably also get way more attention and then get blown out of proportion and then everyone would be totally scared of them more right. so than what happens now, because I mean traffic accidents are a huge danger to people, right? Like it's the biggest danger to children.
As John points out in his article, you know, there are a whole class of situations in which we trust humans to reasonably violate otherwise applicable rules.
Yes.
Right? So about like, you know when it is safe to pull a car over to the side of the road, even though that's not legally a parking spot. You know when you should, you know, stop and let someone else go in front of you.
Well,
and
you know,
you might have to
Jersey
speed
Turnpike.
Because everybody around you is speeding and it's a danger if
Correct.
You don't
If you're
speed.
Doing the speed limit on the Jersey Turnpike, you are the danger. It's not the cars around you. So, like, that's... But if you're an automatic car who's like, I must go 65,
right.
that's my robotic car voice.
You don't sound very much like Siri. But I think what it gets to maybe at a deeper level, the ethical question is, we are ready to trust other human beings, even when we know they're not perfect, at different levels than we're ready to trust machines that have been programmed by other human beings.
But I feel like that's how it should be. No, shouldn't we be more trusting of humans than no? Not really.
John, what would the emphasis say?
What is the answer to this question?
Let's get you back in here.
The ethicist might say first that we don't set up our society to minimize harm to ourselves, or we'd all stay home. That there's still a lot of choice about how we want to live. One of the most interesting things I learned reporting this story, which is where kind of capitalism and ethics meet, is that one of the biggest reasons we might not see self-driving cars being widespread is that people might not want them, that even if technology is there, it's not clear yet that there's a market for these very expensive machines that you don't get to drive. I mean, people like driving.
It completely changes the concept of a road trip movie.
Right.
Like, I think what we're going to see is communities like, say, older people in Arizona who have very easy to navigate grid systems where a self-driving car will take them to their doctor from their shared living space.
So you're like minimizing the decisions the self-driving cars would have to make if it's in like a simpler situation.
That's right. Because right now, I mean, you talk about I talked in the story about the trolley problem, which is a famous problem in ethics where you have a car headed for a bus of people. There's 20 people on the bus, and 20 feet away next to the bus is a baby in a carriage. Does the algorithm in the car, is it programmed to hit the bus and kill 20 people, or hit the baby and kill the baby? And it sort of stands in for this idea that there aren't any easy answers to any of this, and we can't program machines to make these decisions because we don't know how to make these decisions, really.
Right.
I mean, it's very, very confusing.
And you have to program, like, and you also have to program the machine to either, or to generally to preserve the drivers, what they want to do. So that means the machine could also be potentially, like, if it's going to hit a wall or hit a kid, you know, the
right.
car is probably going right. to be, to
that's right.
algorithmically want to hit the kid because it's less danger to the driver. But obviously that's a huge problem ethically for people.
And a couple of deaths we've had with self-driving cars, there was one in Arizona this year, came about because the technology didn't properly identify what it was looking at. I think in Arizona, it thought it was going under a bridge, and actually it was going under a truck, and it hit the truck and killed the driver. And so the technology isn't even, especially the visual recognition software, is not good enough yet to even start, you know, having a choice.
See, I think this proves that I'm right, and they're scary, Sam. This is, you know, just
I see a lot of horror movies coming out of this scenario.
I know. I've completely flummoxed him.
He's gonna let that go. John, one other connection to the Catholic tradition that you brought out in your article was through the work of a Jesuit thinker, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, and specifically about the tension between looking at technology as something that is essentially, you know, opposed to humanity, or as something that you know, augments and extends and deepens humanity. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, how ethicists and how people who are working on AI are using Teilhard to think about what technology means for our humanity.
And FYI, we have 3 minutes.
So very quickly, John.
Not, you know.
I was dreading the part where I was going to have to lecture the Jesuit about basically, he stands in for a school of thought that embraces technology as a way of uniting people and of reaching a point even of spiritual bliss, which I guess if you look at the way that the founder of the internet, or one of the guys considered the founder, Tim Berners-Lee, had a similar vision of the internet, I mean, basically uniting all of humanity in a kind of giant, you know, kumbaya singing circle, and that, you know, we could reach a point of real appreciation and love through communicating with better technology. And so it's sort of a utopian view of technology, and that was the direction that a lot of his writing went in.
Although one of the things I don't know, in what I do know about Teilhard, one of the things that I take as a challenge from his thinking is, you know, insofar as the genie's not going back in the bottle, and the advance of technology is, you know, at least under capitalist motivations, is kind of inevitable. The question this poses to the rest of us is, how then are we going to humanize it, right? How are we going to make it serve true human goods and human goals while it's advancing? And how are we going to shape its advance?
That's right. And the last line of the story belongs to a Dominican sister at Villanova who is a disciple of Teilhard. And she points out that we always have a choice in how we apply any of this technology, whether it's how we use Facebook or how the government of New Jersey designed its bail program, that human beings always have the choice of applying, you know, more reason and more of a human touch to how it's used.
Yeah. We have a choice if we choose to use it.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, John. We really appreciate it. For more on this topic, you can read the full article at americamagazine.org/serious. What are the dangers of artificial intelligence in our brave new world of self-driving cars? You'll talk to me or Sam for different answers on that. But thanks very much, John. So for more, you can go to our website, americamagazine.org. You can follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc. And to subscribe, please call 1-800-627-9533. For Sam Sawyer and Robert David Sullivan and myself, we hope you have a very wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.